Welcome to Compassion Collective. On today's episode of Compassion Collective, we reflect on our recent conversation with Dr. Paul Gilbert. We're also excited to share that we've created some helpful, compassionate, and self-compassionate letter writing templates that are available now for free download on our website, www.compassion-collective.com. If these sound like they'd be interesting or helpful to you, we'd encourage you to check them out. One of the things that we were thinking about is that it might be nice after the interview episodes with our guests to talk a little bit and take some time to slow down and reflect on the little gold nuggets that we feel like we pick up from those interview episodes. And there are obviously a lot of them, but just right. To take some time to like talk about some of the things that really resonated with us.
Yeah. And just unpack it a little bit. Cause I think, you know, there's so much information, and then just taking some time to see.
Yeah. How they affect our own lives, how, you know, kind of what we think about them. So Paul Gilbert's amazing.
Amazing.
I think he is so special. And for obviously a lot of our listeners wouldn't probably know this, but you and I had the great fortune of actually being able to do a training with him in compassion focused therapy. And so we got to actually be in a room and be with him in the flesh. And I think one of the things I appreciate about Paul is just, first of all, he's obviously incredibly bright and just really insightful. I also really love, and I feel like I've heard this from some of our listeners too, like he's funny. The levity
he brings. Yeah. Totally. Right.
And
because we're talking about like pretty weighty, right? Like we're talking about shame. We're talking about, all of these like very harsh voices that we have in our heads. And he's just at this place where he can make you laugh about these topics.
Exactly.
Which gives you a little bit of distance from them too. And is a nice reprieve.
Yeah. It gives you some distance. And I think it also gives like a little bit of a reminder of sometimes we don't have to take ourselves quite as seriously as we do take ourselves. Right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes being able to, and that's, you know, that my intention is not to like minimize or, you know, undermine, but it's just like, there are times where we need to shake it up a little bit, and it might be helpful. You know, all of this conversation is about how we can relate to ourselves differently. And so there's some moments where it's helpful to incorporate a little bit more levity, you know, and a smile or a laugh. So I think that Paul brings a lot of that to the work and to the conversation space, which I just think is pretty refreshing.
Right. No, I totally agree.
So one of the things that really resonated with me that I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on this. So Paul talked a lot about like what the narrative is when we're self-compassionate. What's the narrative? What's the content of what we're saying to ourselves, our self-dialogue? And then he introduced this other piece that I think gets neglected more often.
The tone.
So it's not like what we say to ourselves, which is important, but it's also how we're talking to ourselves.
Absolutely. And I've heard this with so many of my clients, and I can totally relate to it. This feeling of like, oh yeah, I'm just going to say these, you know, nice, kind things to myself or whatever that I don't believe, and that, you know, maybe feel like they feel phony to me because I'm saying them in not a genuine way. And so that's what he connected to and was like, oh dear. Yeah. We got to pay attention to the tone. We got to shift the tone and have it be coming from a more genuine place of caring than a sort of Pollyanna like idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even almost like a self-critical tone too. Like I think the example he gave in the episode was like, you know, he was working with someone struggling with depression and it was like, buck up, like you should be able to do this, you know,
right, so like you've got all these great things in your life.
Yeah. Why are you depressed? Right. And, and so I think like the goal there was to try to be self-encouraging. But then what happens is if like we've got those words, but they're ringing empty, you know.
Right, or they just basically are more self-criticism. Now it's about how you're relating to yourself.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right. And I think in terms of like really taking time to think about how we're speaking to ourselves and to foster that tone is also tied into a lot of like the sort of the imagery work that we were talking about too, like being able to actually close your eyes and picture, like, if there's been a compassionate person in your life, you know, what has their voice sounded like when they've talked to you or when they've comforted you, right? Like, what's the tone? What's the pitch? What's the cadence? Right.
What are the subtleties in their face? Right? Yeah. Like just really dial into those things that actually signal to us safety and soothing and calmness. And it's not just the content.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's so critical. And I think that that's a point that gets lost really often. And I think it also then leads to a lot of people thinking that self-compassion is all kind of phony baloney.
Right. Because or not for just, them. Yeah.
Right. Because it's just this empty stuff that they're not really buying into. But I think the tone is also what helps make it actually more genuine. So I just thought that was a really valuable point and one that stuck with me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think one of the things that stood out for me was that Paul talks a lot about our intuitive wisdom around this stuff. So I think a barrier for anyone learning about anything new can be like, oh my gosh, you know, what do I have to figure out and learn this whole new thing? Where's the manual to be kind to myself and this whole thing? And there are manuals for sure out there to help. But he's saying, like, wait a minute, you already have probably a pretty strong arsenal, right? Of stuff that you can draw on more intentionally, yeah. And cultivate in your everyday life. It's not something that, like, you can go out and buy. You already have it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that's so important. And it actually reminds me of a conversation with someone the other day. Someone actually asked me, do you think it's possible that some people are just born without compassion? Do you think it's possible that some people just lack it? And I think that maybe there are very rare instances where maybe there is some issue with that. But my belief is that by and large, 99.99999, you know, more than that percent of human beings are innately capable, you know, and this is what we're talking about, this inborn wisdom, are innately capable of being compassionate to others and compassionate to themselves. I think where people maybe sometimes feel like they're lacking is just, we haven't cultivated it. We haven't given time to growing that. And again, it goes back to our muscle analogy, right? Like, of course it feels like if it's missing, if it's this puny little muscle that doesn't really get used.
Right.
But I agree with you. I think being able to tap into that trust in ourselves, that this is something I'm capable of just because I'm a human being.
Exactly. Right. You came with it all packaged, like it's in the package.
Yeah.
It's right. Just figuring out how to practice it and be more intentional about it.
Exactly. And that's what he also, you know, Paul's research is very much rooted in evolutionary psychology. And he talks a lot about these like evolutionary processes. So he talks a lot about like mother and infant or parent and infant, even in, you know, animal models and primates. Right. And that there again is this inborn, innate, you know, tendency to comfort, to react when offspring are in need of food or comfort or suffering in some way. Mm-hmm. So I love that kind of evolutionary tie too.
Yeah, I love that too. And it's making me think about how, so it's easy to see those dynamics happen with the infant and the mother, right? Like the infant cries out and is upset, the mother tends to it. I think what happens over time, especially in certain cultures, is that we start to internalize some of what we would normally reach out for help with. And so it doesn't elicit that same soothing back, right? Like we're in a culture that sort of stifles a little bit that very natural process, or maybe that's part of, maybe there's some aspect of it that's part of normal development. And then there's some aspect of it that could be really stifling and keep us from engaging in that, like call response.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And obviously by our culture, you and I were both born and raised in the United States. There are obviously subcultures even within, the US, but I think that we both come from a very individualistic society. And I think that this, again, goes back to, you know, some of the values that our society, the culture we come from holds in terms of being like maybe overly independent, overly self-sufficient.
Right, I wonder having if, your stuff together.
Right.
And projecting that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I wonder if that also affects what you're talking about in terms of the call and response reciprocity sort of dynamic. And then obviously also the way that we're maybe very hard on ourselves.
Right, right. Because we don't allow for even those things like, you know, maybe discomfort to have the call and response in our own self, like the intra process.
Exactly. Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I also think this is kind of related to what we're talking about, maybe, and maybe even more the first point about tone, but Paul also talked a lot about differentiating, and this is really important, differentiating kindness and compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is something that, like, time and time again, those are things that get conflated.
Mm-hmm. And we stumble in that too.
Oh, all the time, all the time.
It's so easy to.
Yeah, it's completely easy to. But I think it's really important to remember that, you know, oftentimes being compassionate does end up looking kind. It does usually involve kindness. But I think what's more important about compassion is remembering that, as Paul says, it's about getting really clear on intention.
Mm-hmm.
The intention to care for oneself, to care for one's needs in a moment. Right. And that doesn't always look kind. It doesn't have to always look kind.
Right. And I can even actually think of some situations where that wouldn't look like traditional kindness.
Are there any that like come to mind?
Well, I'm just thinking like sometimes we talk, when we talk about self-care or self-compassion, we're actually advocating for people to do things like set up certain boundaries in their life that might not immediately appear kind
to everyone else
in their world. Right.
Right.
So that's another place where it's clear to see the distinction.
Yeah, that's such a good example. And I think that that's obviously really relevant for, you know, people who have experienced abuse, you know, come from abusive families, are in abusive relationships, where actually self-compassion means kind of getting assertive, learning to cultivate assertiveness and as you said, draw boundaries for oneself.
Right.
And that, as you exactly said, that's not necessarily kind, what we think
of as kind.
Well, it doesn't
look, right, yeah, exactly. It doesn't look like kindness on the surface. Another example that's coming to mind is just that when you're engaging in self-compassion, for example, and you're trying to care for yourself, that might not always look like kindness, in that self-compassion can look like setting goals and taking responsibility for certain things in your life and holding yourself accountable. Like, those can be ways that you care for yourself and meet yourself where you are and try to alleviate some suffering that's going on. It's not going to look like kindness.
Right. Right.
But it takes a lot of shapes, basically, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm also trying to think, I mean, like, I think my understanding of self-compassion and the way I think about self-compassion has evolved over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think right now I'm very much in a place of really thinking about self-compassion as a choice. It's action oriented, right? That's another, I think, important thing, is a lot of times people conflate self-compassion or compassion in general with emotion.
Right.
Right. And certainly emotion is involved in compassion. I mean, emotion is involved in most of our everything we do and whatever, but that compassion involves this commitment. It involves action. And so I think,
go ahead. Well, I was just thinking, I think that's such an important thing to stay with, because oftentimes I will hear folks say, like, I can't even access that, like, that loving, genuine tone with myself, because I don't believe those things, right? And so, but what I love is to try and focus on what are the actions that you would do if you did believe those things. And if you engaged in those behaviors over time, is it possible that your beliefs could update, right?
Shift. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, our behavior influences our beliefs and our emotions
just
as much as, you know, vice versa.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that that's such a good point, that there's a lot of behavioral kind of intervention we can do when we're talking about compassion. And then we can see how other aspects of our experience follow suit, whether we're talking about our beliefs or, you know, our emotions or what have you. I mean, I think you and I can even like relate to that in a lot of the experiential exercises that we did at the compassion focused therapy retreat we went to a couple of years ago. You know, in that when different presenters or leaders were guiding us through exercises, you know, this room full of people, we were all in different places in our heads, emotionally, you know, whatever, but we all sort of came together around these certain behaviors or exercises we were trying. And then I just remember personally, you know, reflecting on like, wow, like just doing that thing, look how much else in my system shifted.
Exactly. So it's not waiting for you to feel a certain way. And then suddenly it's like, woohoo, I have this thing. It's like, well, why don't we try to practice and engage in it and see how that affects you, how it affects your physiology, how it affects your belief systems. I mean, it's the same idea of like, if I waited until I felt ready to go to the gym, well, like, I
would never get
to
the
gym. Going anywhere, you know? Exactly. Thank God for COVID, because it's a great excuse.
Not even a possibility.
No, exactly. And so, but you know, when you're at the gym and then you get moving, you've got your good playlist on and you're starting to feel strong. And then like, you know, what you do that day after day, right, and you show up and you start to see the changes.
Yeah.
But again, you just can't sit around waiting to feel it shift in your body.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of what we're talking about of the like start engaging behaviorally and then see what follows, what are we talking about behaviorally?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one thing that's so cool about compassion focused therapy is that there are so many avenues in, right? So if one thing doesn't work for you, that's okay. Try another thing, or maybe like, you know, try it a few days later. But I know, you know, we talk about different mindfulness exercises and imagery exercises, as you referred to before, like imagining yourself in the presence of someone who you consider to be compassionate and wise and understanding. Yeah. So just cultivating that estate for yourself by imagining receiving compassion, or maybe even practicing extending compassion, again, in like a meditation or an imagery exercise. I know that you have a fondness for letter writing.
I do. Ugh, I think that stuff is so powerful. I do. Yeah.
It is
powerful. And that, yeah, I mean, that's basically where, I mean, we can do it several different ways. We can write letters, compassionate letters to other people or animals or whatever beings in our lives. And then we can also write letters directed to ourselves, you know, validating and addressing things that we're struggling with, challenges that we're bumping up against. And I think one of the really powerful things about that, in my experience, just when I've tried it, and I should note that I did do like a month where I would do this every morning. I started my mornings like this for a month, and I really noticed some interesting sort of effects and impacts on my impact on my life. But I digress. I think what's really, really cool about the self-compassionate letter writing is that it's amazing how, at least for me, I started to feel like there was this voice outside of where I was in whatever given moment that was giving me validation, support, care, warmth, that if you had asked me like right before I started writing the letter, I would have told you, I don't feel like I can give this to myself right now.
Right. Like, yeah. I don't feel anywhere near that. Yeah.
You're right. I feel so distant, disconnected from that. Yet I did give it to myself. Like, that came from me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yet it actually felt more expansive than that. So I just thought that was a really amazing kind of shift in state and perspective.
I'm just thinking another thing that we talked about recently and that I think both of us have found useful is physical touch.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like our own, like, so an example for this is just putting your hand to your chest. I like to rub my hands first to get them like a little warm.
Get the warmth and energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just putting my hand to my chest. And it's something that I can do to calm myself, to remind myself that I'm here for myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even in, you know, I could be in an elevator or I could be in a meeting and like no one's really necessarily aware that that's what's going on for me, but it's just a little reminder. Hugging yourself. I think a few years ago, I would have totally laughed at someone who told me to try that, right? I would have thought like, that's so not for me. But actually, I'll tell you just about one experience I had. I was getting a massage And at the end of the massage, they like, you know, they leave you to get all ready and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I had been avoiding really checking in with myself for a while because a big thing was about to happen and I didn't want to deal with it. I was like moving out. Uh-huh. And I knew I just had to get a lot of stuff done. And so I felt like, you know, I just put myself to the side, basically, in my own experience of it, which is like, practice what you preach, lady. Anyway, so I had this minute by myself, and I just hugged myself and immediately started crying. I mean, it was just like, you know, just those tiny physical reminders.
You know what's so funny, Suze, is that, I mean, I had the same experience. My experience was at the beginning of COVID, of the pandemic. And I think I had a day and a night where I felt particularly scared and overwhelmed and and very, very sad for someone who had experienced a loss. And I was really feeling a lot of very intense emotion. And I did the same thing. It was at night and I just like hugged myself. And again, it's amazing that like, it really felt like I was really being hugged. Like it didn't just feel like I had my arm wrapped around myself and that I was hugging myself. It really felt like almost like I was being hugged by just someone else. Mm-hmm. But what was so cool is I was like, wait, this is me. This is something I can give myself. And I had this very similar experience to you. I kind of just opened up and also started crying, just experienced this relief, which I think came from just feeling really connected. I also think I was going to say in response to what you were saying about the hand on the chest, that's also something that I've done multiple times before. And I think what's really powerful about that specific physical gesture is that so much sensation and emotion that we carry in our bodies manifests itself in our trunk. We feel so much in our chest and in our abdomen. Of course, we can feel stuff in our extremities and our head and whatever, but so much comes up in, you know, from neck to hips, like so much, or waist. And there, so I think there's something very specific about the hand on the chest, that
right.
Feeling that pressure, you know, that light pressure connectedness, mm-hmm. And being able to like physically almost touch and access certain sensations or emotions or experience, emotional and physical experience, is really powerful.
Right. I think it's a physical gesture to let your mind and your, you know, psyche know I'm checking in with you, right? Like it's almost like, yeah, reaching right into that sensation, which is really neat. And that's, again, that's something I do in yoga a lot too, when I'm like laying down, right? Don't we like put our hand on our belly, our hand on our
chest? Yeah.
Yeah. So again, maybe even if that's already a part of your yoga practice, you can start to think of it in a different way.
So I'm curious for you, you know, Paul went through like, he kind of went through an amazing menu of exercises, right? And I'm curious, you know, he was talking about letter writing. He was talking about breath and the specific breathing exercise that, that, you know, Paul does a lot and that we did together at the retreat that we went to. Is he explained a little bit, but he went through it kind of quickly, is, you know, on your inhale, you're saying in your mind slowing down, and then you take an elongated exhale. So you want your exhale to be longer than your inhale, and you're saying to yourself, body slowing down. And you just repeat that, mind slowing down, body slowing down. And I'm so curious, I found that to be a really helpful breathing exercise. I know there are a million breathing exercises that people can do, but I found that to be really helpful. And I almost feel like, you know, we talk about that breathing process being really linked to helping to control and shift our parasympathetic nervous system. So that slowing down, resting, digesting sort of bodily response. And I feel like with that specific exercise, mind slowing down, body slowing down, I almost feel that physically happening in a way. I feel it more strongly than in some other breathing exercises I've done. So anyway, so he talked about that one. He talked about some fostering compassionate imagery. Mm-hmm. I'm curious for you and yourself, your life, what have you found to be some of like the most helpful strategies?
Yeah, I have to say that it's one of the things that's been most helpful for me came from Kristen Neff's work on self-compassion. Mm-hmm. So she talks about the very simple question of asking yourself, what do I need right now? when I first heard that as an option of something to ask myself, I was truly blown away. It felt like water in a desert for me because I didn't realize how much of my time I spent focusing on other people's wants and needs and how I could show up for them, right? Or like, even if it wasn't for other people, like maybe I had a whole to-do list for the day and it was just orienting myself to getting all that done. And very rarely did I consider myself a priority to check in with and ask, what do I need right now? And once I started doing that regularly, so much has shifted in my life. Because I'm able to actually check in, see where I am, see what I do need, try and give that to myself. And so that's where self-compassion for me takes place. It's in the asking and orienting to myself, and then it's in the answering.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love the way that you just put that, because I think again, what's really important is like, sometimes it's hard to find the answers. Sometimes it's hard to know what those answers are, and that's okay.
Yeah,
that's so normal. That's so normal. But what you just said about like, it's in the asking, like so much is in the asking, in the acknowledging and the tuning in, the connecting.
Right. I told actually one of my clients, I was like, why don't you give this a shot? But do me a favor, for the first week, don't expect an answer. You're so new to this that like, it wouldn't even make sense for you to suddenly know the answer.
Yeah. Well, and that again, you know, we'll go into this probably later in the season, but this also taps into that tendency that we have to really want, you know, the striving, achieving, you know, it's like, I need an answer. There needs to be a, you know, an end in like an, you know, and an objective and something that I achieve. Right. And if we can actually, if part of the practice can be just suspending that, it's like, what if that doesn't need to exist right now? I think that's so liberating. So I just think that that's really powerful.
Wow. Paul gave us a lot to think about.
Yeah, he sure does. I find anytime we have a conversation or spend time with him, I'm leaving reflecting and thinking about a lot. So anyway, I feel really, really grateful that we were able to share in his wisdom. And you know, I hope our listeners gleaned something from that conversation too. And I'm really excited to see what our next conversation has in store.
Thank you all for listening to Compassion Collective. You can visit us on the web at compassion-collective.com. Please also consider donating to our Patreon fund at patreon.com/compassion-collective. We'll see you next time.
This episode is brought to you by your hosts, Michaela Swee and Susan Murray, co-founders of Compassion Collective. Audio editing by Kyle Turner. Music by singer-songwriter Michael Shines.